Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome back, Larry. Okay, we've had 5 days off. All right, I took 5 days off. It was my wife's birthday. We had a wonderful few days, and it was just great. And it's good to be back talking with you. It really is on a beautiful summer's day here in Maine. And we're going to travel to the land of enchantment today over to New Mexico and talk to Dr. Ryan Stewart, who is their Secretary of Public Education. I've been looking forward to this show. Okay, and we're going to talk about all the wonderful things they're doing, keeping equity in focus as we went through the pandemic and then as we ended the pandemic and have to go into a new school year, et cetera. We'll hear all the plans and what happened, all that from Dr. Stewart in just a couple of minutes. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That is the website of our American Consortium for Equity and Education. We are the voice of the American Consortium for Equity and Education here over at Education Talk Radio. Did I say I'm Larry Jacobs? I don't even remember if I did that, but it's good to be with you here today. Please go over to ace-ed.org, check out all the wonderful things we do for equity, and you'll be able to see our wonderful magazine, which is called Equity in Access. It's an online journal that we are very proud of. 95-page issue with some great advertisers and absolutely superb editorial focusing strictly on equity and access. So please check it all out. Everything we do over there is free. You're invited to join our consortium. If you're involved in education, again, over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. And now over to Dr. We're going to go from Maine to New Mexico. Are you there, Dr. Stewart?
I am. Thank you for having me on today.
It is my pleasure. And please call me Larry. Can I call you Ryan? Is that all right?
You certainly may.
Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to have you here. I've got to tell you, how long have you been Secretary of Public Education in New Mexico, Ryan?
Well, I'm coming up on my two-year anniversary. And I do have to say that my wife is a native Mainer. So we've spent some good time in Maine. So I hope that you're enjoying the Maine weather and the Maine summer and vacation land up there.
You tell your wife it's a perfect day today, about 70 degrees and sunny, okay? And give her this bad news.
Send some of that cool weather our way, please, Larry.
And tell her this is because of the pandemic and all that, everybody coming out of the pandemic, lobsters are $9.99. And she's a Mainer. She'll understand how expensive that is. Okay. Where's she from in Maine? Yeah, where's she from?
Scarborough.
Oh, very close to me. Well, I'm there all the time, for goodness sakes. All right? Right south of Portland. That's wonderful. Okay? Tell her hello from Maine. Please, make like lobster claws when you tell her that. She'll get it. Okay? That's terrific, Ryan. And, Ryan, before we get into New Mexico, I do have to say you worked in the city of Philadelphia. Okay? At their schools, correct?
I certainly did. I was in the Office of School Improvement and Innovation at the school district.
Well, I'll tell you, I went all through school, K-12 in Philadelphia, all through. Boom.
Okay. Now, which schools did you go to?
Lamberton, which is now a high school, was an elementary school back then. This is about 2 million mm-hmm. years ago. So I went to Lamberton at 76th and Woodbine. Then I went to Bieber, I can't remember, 59th and Malvern, I think. Okay,
yep.
Dimner Bieber Junior High, and then I graduated Overbrook.
Okay. All right. I've worked with all of those schools.
Yeah, I'll bet. And, you know, Overbrook, when I was just to reminisce for a second, Overbrook, when I was there, had 5,000 students.
Was Wilt Chamberlain one of them? Was he there when you were there?
No, Wilt went there exactly 10 years before I did.
Okay.
Okay. And Wilt and Wally Jones and Walt Hazard. So it was a great basketball school.
Yeah,
it's just
some
great
real
stuff.
History at that school.
Oh, man, it's just unbelievable. The Brook, 59th and Lancaster. And now the last question about Philly. Dr. Ryan Stewart, formerly from Philadelphia, we talked lobster. What's your favorite steak sandwich place in Philly? Do you have one?
So I'm going to go off the beat. I'm going to go off the beaten path here. I'm going to go all the way up to Roxborough and D'Alessandro's.
Yeah.
That's my number one.
Wow, D'Alessandro's?
D'Alessandro's. Not a lot of people know about it unless you spend some time up in Northwest Philly, but it's delicious.
And Rock, thank you very much for telling me that, okay? And I'll give you one. Try John's Roast Pork if you never tried that.
Oh, yeah.
Down by, the IKEA in South Philly. Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, man, we could talk on this for hours. D'Alessandro's, that is now in the memory banks, in the lockbox. Thank you. I'll check that out. Brian, it was a crazy year. You're 2 years in. Let's say you're a half year in when all this mess started, the pandemic. Okay, you're in a new state, a new position there as the Secretary of Education. Congratulations, well-deserved. Tell us what happened with the pandemic and then put it into an equity focus. How did it all work?
Yeah, so as you can imagine, I started basically around Labor Day. And so I basically had just learned where the bathroom was when the pandemic broke out.
God.
And we were pretty early. I think we were the third state that moved to shut down schools once the pandemic entered our state. So we moved quickly. We moved very aggressively to try to make sure we were doing everything that we can to stem the spread of the virus in the state.
Yeah.
New Mexico is prime for the spread of the virus. We have lots of intergenerational households, lots of people who live together in relatively tight spaces. We have many of the demographic groups that were hit hardest by the pandemic and widespread poverty throughout the state, of which make – and relative to many other states, we have less hospital capacity. So it was a very, very real life-threatening – it was life-threatening everywhere, but really more so. New Mexico was almost a tinderbox for –
Wow,
for COVID.
I didn't know that. I did not know that.
So, yeah. So we moved aggressively and took some, of course, extraordinary measures to make sure that we could keep our community safe, which with schools, you know, we spent the entire year between – March of 2020 and March of 2021 with the vast majority of our kids and staff learning from home. And that was a very difficult decision, made even harder by the fact that New Mexico, among the contiguous states, has the lowest per capita internet broadband capacity.
Really?
And so we were really trying to deal with that. We're very spread out, very rural state. And so on many of our Native American reservations, many of our very rural areas, there's just not the infrastructure there for broadband.
You're a big city guy. I think you grew up in California, correct?
I'm a Texan. I'm an Arlington, Texas native.
But
I did spend a lot of time in the Bay Area. I went to college and worked out in the Bay Area.
Okay, and I knew you came from California to Philly, so you were Texan originally. Again, Arlington, Texas. I would say that's fairly urban, if I may. Okay, big city area. Okay, then San Francisco, Philly, etc. Okay, and as you look, this is an interesting thing. You were suddenly in Santa Fe. You're in Santa Fe, right? Are you?
That's right.
Lucky man, but I'll just move on from that. That's one of my favorite places in the universe, like everybody else, all right? But all of a sudden, okay, you're a big city guy, and all of a sudden you're dealing with a very rural state. Again, and if I may, indigenous population of Native Americans, et cetera. It's a very different experience, all right? How did you talk about your experience cultural-wise dealing with that as you got there, and again, then this pandemic, the things you had to realize. And you said it, multi-generation families, the Indian reservations, which didn't even occur to me. Just talk about that experience. That's a very interesting thing.
So going from a city like Philadelphia to a state like New Mexico, they are polar opposites in so many different ways.
Yeah.
And so for me, a big part of those, that my entry into the state was really getting all around the state, getting to know the people, getting to learn the people, getting to understand the assets and the challenges and the issues and the desires and the needs. And so really, this is a beautiful, beautiful place. You get a much
land of
more
– Land of enchantment, if I may. Yeah.
And it lives up to the name. You get a much more person-to-person, interrelational type of feel between state government and all of your constituents than you do in a huge state like California or even a big state like Pennsylvania.
Right.
So you really get to know a lot of the people, a lot of the places. There's just such a strong connection to the land here, and people have just been here for generations. And so I think that was a big part of my work coming in. And when the pandemic hits, it hit different communities very differently. And our Native American communities got hit by far the hardest. And so it's been a very, very rough and difficult year in that respect.
And again, not only running the education department, but I just want to say this, how important it is and the good job you folks did. I mean, it's also a cultural difference. That's the point I was making. He did it, said it so well. I mean, it's really different. All right, and I congratulate for all the work you did. As you looked at New Mexico, and now the pandemic has hit, but you were there before the pandemic. And as you know, we're the American Consortium for Equity in Education. From an equity point of view, how did you view the state, A, as you got there in terms of equity, which I know is very important to you and your staff, okay? And then as the pandemic hit, all of a sudden, it opened our eyes to so many other things. Just talk about the word equity before and during the pandemic from the state point of view.
Yeah. So before the pandemic, New Mexico had significant challenges when it came to making sure that all students had an equitable education. Now we're gifted with the fact that we have just this beautiful array of cultures. That all come together, this beautiful array of languages. And then the not-so-beautiful historical aspect of so many of these communities have been marginalized, not attended to, not fully resourced for decades, centuries. And so with that, there are just enormous equity challenges across all gamuts in terms of representation in the curriculum and in our content standards, in terms of pedagogy, in terms of being able to recruit teachers that are representative of the population, in terms of funding and resources. There's even a lawsuit around making sure that there are sufficient resources funded for education, and we've made over $1 billion of investment, new investment in education since the start of this administration, and still going. So just enormous equity challenges pre-pandemic, which resulted in really low outcomes, really low rates of college going, high school graduation, that we had to come in and tackle. And then you flash forward to the pandemic hitting in a rural state that lacks broadband infrastructure in some of its poorest and most rural communities. It just exacerbates the challenges that we were already facing. And now there's no ducking and running from it. Now we still have to face it.
No.
Our kids are still counting on us to deliver. And it's been just an incredibly difficult year, but we've tried to marshal every resource that we can to get out, to support our students, to support our staff, to make sure that they're still taken care of. Because of the work that we did on the health and safety, we were able to open up our schools. After the winter break, we were able to open up most of our schools in the hybrid model. And then because New Mexico was doing so well and our vaccine program was rolling out so well, we were able to open up all of our schools earlier in the spring. And so we were able to move faster than a lot of places, including some of the bigger cities, to do that. But it was certainly a challenge.
It is a challenge. And I congratulate you for all the good work you did, because believe me, I mean, it was just – so tough everywhere, but in a big, if I may, rural state. And again, I love New Mexico. Who doesn't? But it's just amazing. Were you surprised? You came in from Philly, okay? When you got to New Mexico, okay? Were you surprised at the, if I may, inequity across the state? regarding broadband, regarding, again, lower levels of success among perhaps the indigenous people because of under-resourced schools, et cetera. Were you surprised at that? In a place I love, again, the land of enchantment, okay? What was your thought as you got there?
Well, I got to tell you something, Larry. So I've been able to go through all the state. And, you know, it's a great part of my role. I get to be in the car, see all the beautiful scenery there is to see everywhere, and go visit schools. And
yep.
New Mexico has come quite a long way in terms of the resource piece. Now we still have
Good.
A long way to go.
Good.
But we have an equalized funding formula. So in a state like Pennsylvania,
great.
Where I came from, they have one of
great.
The most unequal sources of funding. In New Mexico, property taxes are not the be-all and end-all of how much your school gets. The state puts it all into a big pool and distributes it out into an equity-based formula, and we've continued to make tweaks to that formula to try to drive even more resources into the least resourced areas.
Great.
I'm very proud of an initiative called the Family Income Index, which we were able to get passed into law this year, which is going to allow us to put even more resources into the schools that have the highest concentrations of poverty. So we've made great strides in that. I think when you go throughout the state, you see new facilities that have been built over the last decade or so to really try to make up for the decades of disinvestment that had happened prior to that.
Wow.
Now, there's still a long way to go on all of those fronts, but I think that we've made a lot of strides. Now, what I would say is we have achievement rates that are far below where they need to be, far below where they need to be. And we have some great teachers. We have some great schools. But we have too many places where those are just existing in pockets, and kids aren't getting what they need in the other places.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so we have to really get this to scale, get that excellence to scale. But we certainly have made some good progress.
Yeah, Ryan, as you look at that, that's, and I agree with you, you probably have great teachers, and if I may, good-hearted, well-meaning, intelligent teachers, okay, across the whole state. You'd be the first to agree with that, okay? So
of
this
course.
Is not derogatory about any educator or anything like that, okay? But as you look at this, what are the challenges? If you go into one of the places with has some of the poorest scores, is it just because now that there's an equality in terms of the dollars that are going into the school district, all right? What's the challenge now that's holding it back? Can you find enough teachers? Can you find enough teachers that match the population so that these kids can see role models, et cetera? I want to ask the question, but how do you see the future happening and changing with all this? Okay, because as I say, it's a great place. Okay, where do we begin? And
so our teacher shortage problem is very real, and it mirrors I think what we see nationally, where it's just a crisis being able to find qualified people to come into the role, and I think we shot ourselves in the foot in the kind of the previous administration, where we drove a lot of teachers out with some of the policies that were enacted that teachers felt demeaned the profession. Whether it's your school grading or accountability systems or evaluation systems and so on, overemphasis on testing. A lot of these things
mm-hmm.
we found were the reasons that our teachers were citing for leaving the profession in droves. Now, the good news is, We've done a lot of work to, I think, try to reverse some of that damage. So the last couple of years, we've actually seen declines in the number of teacher vacancies that we have across the state.
Oh, good.
In the double-digit percentages each year. And so I think that's a real sign of progress. Now, the pandemic
is
having, I think, a big impact on that. We're seeing retirements higher, resignations
yep.
higher
yep.
than what they
yep.
typically are. And so it adds another layer of challenge into what we need to do next year and the years to come about recruiting and finding teachers, bringing teachers back into the profession if they left. So that's something at both the district level and the state level that's a top priority.
It is. And how are you doing, if I may, I hate to ask it this way, but ethnically regarding teacher recruitment? And again, it's important for Latino kids, okay, Latinx kids, I should say, to see Latinx teachers, that sort of thing, as role models, et cetera. Are we doing okay with that? And I'll say the same for Native Americans, whatever group you want to say. Okay? How are we doing on that, just in general?
Yeah, I agree.
So it's important.
I think research bears out that when you have some of that representation, kids do better. And
yeah, they do.
I think we're not where we need to be on that. And I don't have the exact figures for you, but I think our Native Americans are probably about 10% of our school-age population in the public schools, and we're probably around 3% in terms of our representation among the teaching staff. So definitely a mismatch there. I don't know if it's at the same magnitude, but we're also always looking for more Latino teachers. We're always looking for more bilingual teachers. Both in Spanish and our Native American languages and other languages, and so that we're not where we need to be on that, and we do have some focused recruitment efforts to try to correct that imbalance. That is a goal in our strategic plan, and so we're making it a pillar of what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I'll just do an ad for you, everybody. You can go teach in the Land of Enchantment. Okay, think about that. It's like Lord of the Rings. It's a Land of Enchantment. It's so beautiful there. Okay, I mean, just really, it's such a great state. It truly is. I wish you good luck with that. Are you working with the universities to try to increase teacher cohorts? What's happening with them?
We are. So our educator preparation programs, of course, that is a huge, huge partner in all of this, and we're not going to make progress on it if we don't have good programs and assistance with them to do that work. So we are trying to work across the state to get that done.
Get it done, because it is really, really important. So what's the next step now? You know, if there's a teacher shortage, you certainly know this, if there's a teacher shortage, a lot of school districts are turning to technology to get, so you can get the great physics teacher who might be in Los Alamos and get him teaching in Roswell, okay, via technology. So no kid misses out on, quote, the great physics teacher or whatever the case might be. Talk about technology, broadband, that sort of stuff in the state, because obviously that's going to be on your mind, okay, as you come out of this pandemic. We all learned that lesson, I hope.
Yeah. So there's a lot to talk about with technology. We actually have a court order to improve our technology access for all of our students, and we've been working very hard to get that done. A couple things I'll say here. One is, and this is a silver lining to, you know, this great human tragedy that we've been experiencing.
Yeah. I know just where you're going. Go ahead.
Well, the fact that we've had to go online has meant that we've invested just a ton of money and time and resources and energy into building up an online learning infrastructure that really will expand our capacity to connect the kids in Roswell or on the Navajo Reservation or down in the Boot Heel with resources and access to classes in more populous areas that have a wider range of course offerings and where maybe we have a great teacher who's in the northwest corner and they want to allow the students in the southeast corner of the state to participate in one of their classes.
Yeah.
We're going to have the ecosystem to do that now. And it's been enormously complex trying to fit all the moving parts of that together, because you have to think about things like graduation rates and special education services and fee for service and all of those things. But we're going to have that in place now to be able to build off of and improve. And so that is one good thing to come out of all of this.
Believe me, you know, this pandemic stinks, okay? 600,000 people have died. God knows how many are still sick or feeling the effects. There's this new strain going out in the fight to get people vaccinated. I mean, the pandemic stinks, all right? But hopefully, you know, the old saying, when you wind up with lemons, make lemonade. Hopefully, with the silver lining is that we learn something from this, all right, that we're all going to move forward. And I have to, on that note, I was looking at your at the website for the New Mexico Department of Education, and I read about a woman you work with named Vicki Bannerman. Okay, you know Vicki. She works for you, right?
I do. Yes, she is my deputy secretary.
She is, and she's in charge of equity. All right, I have her title right here. See if I can find it here. Deputy Secretary of Identity, Equity, and Transformation. I was very impressed that you had someone with these titles, again, because we're so interested in all these things. What is her job when it comes to identity, equity, and transformation? How does she work within the department to make these things happen statewide? It's all her job. Dr. Bannerman is her name. Vicki.
That's right. And one thing I'd correct a little bit is Dr. Bannerman's not in charge of equity. I think we are all in charge of equity. And it's a mindset shift that we're trying to put in place. It's all of our jobs. It's not one division or individual or department. But her particular department is structured in a way where the student groups in New Mexico for whom we've longest seen the lowest outcomes and who we need to make sure our public system is designed to deliver for them, they all have people under that umbrella who have just a laser focus on meeting their needs, whether it's the needs of our Native American students, Black students, our bilingual and multicultural education division lives within there, special education lives within there. And they have a really difficult charge of both being laser focused on the populations that we know we need to serve better, and then making sure that across the department, we're always keeping these student groups in mind when we're making our policies, making our plans, developing curriculum, supporting schools. And so there's a lot of interdivisional work that this group does to bring
Good
their expertise
you.
To each area.
Good for you. I tell you, and it's so great to have someone work in that all the time. And I just wanted your take on how you've organized that, quote, particular department, though it works with every department there is. So now let's look at the future, okay? We're right now, today is June 23rd, 2021. Okay, when does school start again?
Most of our schools start up in mid-August.
Mid-August, okay, something new. Okay, in Philly, they all start after a Labor Day, all right? So mid-August, all right? So what's the game plan as we go back to school, Dr. Stewart?
So I think I'll give this kind of a bimodal answer. I think we're going to be much more back to normal.
Yay!
And so, you know, all of our schools will be open full-time. Kids will be back in proximity together. It'll feel more normal in that sense. And I also hope that as we go back, it's not quite as normal, that some of the sacred cows that weren't working.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we've been able to untether ourselves from many of the things
Wonderful.
That, you know, previously had been sacred, like time and space and people and the arrangement of them and offering students choice in their learning and being able to better incorporate meaningful technology alongside the personal experience. Many of these things that you know, maybe we'd give a lip service to or dipped our toes in the water, we've fully jumped in now. And
Good.
While no one would say, hey, let's do the exact same thing we did this past year because we had to, certainly we don't want to throw all of the good things out that actually did work better for families and for kids. And so it'll feel more normal and hopefully more innovative based on the work that we've done.
Right. And the thing that we took for granted before, oh, this particular district just doesn't operate at high speed because of whatever reason, we're not going to let that happen anymore. We're not going to let that happen anymore.
That's
okay.
Right.
We're going to go at full bore into this thing. And, you know, you said it earlier, there should not be education by zip code. Okay, that kid in Northwestern New Mexico should have the same education as a kid in southeastern New Mexico. Okay, it's just so obvious. And this damn pandemic really exposed all that. It's going to be a good year. You're looking forward to a good year?
I cannot wait for a good year. It's been a long one, and so it'll feel very nice to not be talking about PPE and air filtration, but really be talking about teaching and learning.
Actually, you brought up something very interesting. You know, with the structure of schools, has there been any changes in the physical structure of schools as you look at that? That's actually a good point. I haven't really asked that to anybody yet. But as you looked at your schools physically, has there been a difference in coming up?
So physically within the building, I think there have been a lot of changes in terms of how classrooms have been configured and all the safety precautions that have been put in place. I wouldn't say that there's been as much on the side of full-on capital redevelopment and construction,
mm-hmm.
mainly just because of the time scale, that those operate on a multi-year time scale. And so, but I do think going forward, things like our HVAC systems and what they're designed to do and how much space we allocate to a particular classroom and the design of outdoor classrooms, all these things I think are going to be very much impacted in the future whenever we design new schools or renovate schools so that we can be prepared for the next time where something like this may happen and we want to make sure we can continue continuity of services.
Everything is going to change and change for the better. I tell you, Ryan, you're lucky to be in a beautiful place like Santa Fe with the whole state, okay, working with you, and they're very lucky to have you. They are very lucky to have you. Okay, this has been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much, and this has been a great conversation.
Oh, it has been, and best of luck, okay, as this new year unfolds, okay, and just take what we've learned and make it all better, and I have a feeling you didn't need me to tell you that. Okay? So you take care, my friend. Thank you.
All right. You have a good one. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. Oh, what a good guy. Okay, that's Dr. Ryan Stewart. He's the Secretary of Public Education in New Mexico. Okay? They have some equity problems. They're working on it. It's going to all be better. We'll archive the show over at ace-ed.org, and I hope you all go over there, join with us in our American Consortium for Equity in Education, and enjoy our magazine, Equity in Access. My name's Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.